Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Robin Hills, a leading voice in emotional intelligence and the founder of EI for Change, whose work has reached more than 500,000 professionals across 200 countries. Wow. You've been doing this for a long time, Robin. Robin believes that self-awareness is the gateway to intelligent behavior, and his mission is to make emotional intelligence practical, relevant, and essential in our everyday work and leadership. I hope today that we're going to dig into how emotional intelligence is shaping the future of success, why it's the ultimate competitive edge for leaders, and how it can bring more humanity back into the digital world of business. So welcome to the show, Robin.
Yeah, that's a brilliant introduction. Yes, I have been doing this a long time, and thank you for having me on your show.
My pleasure.
Absolutely delighted to be here.
Once I found out you were from Manchester, England, you're in.
Here I am.
Yeah, exactly. For my listeners and viewers, it's because I'm from Manchester, England, and so it has a warm place in my heart. The last sentence that I read, why EI is the ultimate competitive edge for leaders and how it can bring more humanity back into the digital world of business. I don't know, lately I've been feeling as though the digital world is just coming down heavy on me. It's just becoming very pressure-ridden to be out there, to be on LinkedIn more than I have been. Even though I teach people to be on LinkedIn, I just have been feeling that heaviness. And I've noticed also that I'm seeing in people's work that's out there, that people are getting back to the human touch and getting back to wanting to actually talk to people. Have you noticed that?
Yes, very much so. I think the shine is starting to come off some of the LLMs, large language models like ChatGPT and Gemini, because people are recognizing that they are tools. They're very useful tools, but they're not absolutely brilliant. They're not foolproof. Mm-hmm. And often you actually have to go back and challenge the outputs that you're getting from these AI systems because they're not quite right. And in order to check whether they're right or not, if you don't know, you actually have to go along and speak to somebody else who might know. So brings into play the conversations that we need to have. So don't let me take anything away from AI. I think it's a wonderful tool. But the critical word within that is the word tool. We mustn't let it take over who we are, what we are, and what we do.
You know, on a smaller scale, I used to feel that way, and I still do, actually, about the reliance people have on spell check. Because spell check will just tell you if you spelled the word correctly, but it could be the right spelling of the wrong word that's in the wrong sentence in the wrong place, right? And so it's that same feeling for me that don't rely on it. Just, as you said, use it as a tool to I guess, as a starting point in some ways. I know
people
can't spell, but whatever.
Well, I can be a bit cack-handed. I'm very pedantic with my spelling, but I look back on some of the things that I put on LinkedIn and I recognize that I've used two keys instead of one, and I didn't notice it. So I think that the other important thing to bear in mind, and it goes back to the early part of our conversation. Look, I'm from Manchester in England. So any of the outputs from AI need to be Robinized. So I need to get them to speak in my voice. So what I need to do is I need to take out the Americanisms and the American spellings. So there's nothing wrong with Americanisms. There's nothing wrong with American spellings. It's just not me. Mm-hmm. So
I have the same thing in Canada. Yeah, same thing, exactly.
And I think people haven't quite realized that there is bias within these AI models,
Right.
and it leads to a degree of prejudice in the fact that all of the outputs tend to be very US focused. So what we've got to do, and we're in English speaking countries, so what we've got to do is to take those outputs and make them relevant the way we speak. It may be that we speak to Americans, it may be that I speak to Canadians, but I need to speak as an authentic Englishman and not try and be something that I'm not. So goodness only knows what it's like when it's working with people from Germany who speak German, or from France who speak French, or even from the other side of Canada who have a different accent around their French speaking.
So, Robin, let's back up a little bit. You've built your entire career around emotional intelligence. What started all of that? What drew you to this field, and how has that evolved over the years?
Well, I think it would be false to say that I started my career in emotional intelligence, because when
It
I
didn't
did start
exist.
my career, Janice, it didn't
It didn't
exist.
exist.
Well,
That's right. But maybe it was there, but not in certain, that name. Maybe you were
I
always
guess.
mean. Yeah.
I think what I learned over the time when I started my career, I was working in sales. And when people are working as salespeople, they need to learn how to engage, build relationships with the people that they're selling to. And I recognized fairly early on there were some people that were more than happy to engage with me at a deep level. And there were some that weren't interested. Now, it wasn't a role, because people would change roles, or they would go out of one role and there'd be somebody new come into that role. And I actually had to build up an understanding and a relationship with the new person. And sometimes that relationship was a good one, and sometimes the relationship was not as good as I would like it to be. And I recognized it wasn't me. It wasn't the role that was the issue, it was the person, and it was the way in which the person was using their emotional intelligence. Now, I didn't know that at the time, and it wasn't until I left the sales role and started to work in leadership and management. And about that time, Daniel Goldman published his books and brought emotional intelligence out of the academic circles into the everyday working world. And so when I became aware of these books, I recognized this is what I've been looking for. This is the understanding that I've been looking for. So that realization helped me in the work that I was doing. But it wasn't until I left the commercial environment altogether through a series of redundancies within my role, that I decided, look, I'll set myself up in business and let's specialize in what I really believe in. And that's people development, that's relationship building, and that's emotional intelligence.
So I don't. I noticed also in looking into your background that you also are trained in, and this is a small part of what the big picture of what you do, but in those personality type, what do you call them?
Assessments,
Assessments. Thank
questionnaires.
you. Yes, like DISC and is that the one you do?
Myers-Briggs Type
Myers-Briggs.
Indicator,
Yeah, I
yes.
think I've done them all from when I was in corporate because they all went through their cycle, right, at some point or another. I can't remember anything about any of it, not even what my letters or my numbers or whatever are. I think even did True Colors, and there were lots of them. But were those like the forerunners of emotional intelligence, or were those just tools that you use within the practice?
I think it's a bit of both there, Janice, because these tools are very, very powerful and they've been
Yes.
around for a long period of time. I mean, DISC that you mentioned was worked on and developed from Marsden's work, and he lived and worked and published his studies around that in 1928. So it's about 100 years ago. And then it was refined by somebody called Eisenet, and he worked in the 1960s, and his models have now been refined into the modern assessment that we know as DISC. And then Carl Jung developed his ideas and his theories, and they were built upon in the 50s and 60s by a mother-daughter team, Catherine Myers and Isabel Briggs, and they brought together the components of Jung's work and made it more accessible to people like you and I.
Interesting.
Now, the difficulty with all of these is exactly what you've said. People will use them within the corporate environment because they're a bit like a party trick.
Yes.
Oh, this is who I am, this is
Yeah.
what I am, and they do nothing more than with it. You know, they get a series of letters or they
Yeah.
get a color or whatever it is
Yeah.
that comes out of it. And as I say, they do nothing more than with it.
Well,
But
now, yeah, I will say though that if I think about it, all of those things, like in my history and in my experience, I think have helped me in, that's the word I'm looking for, not internally, but they've helped me sort of on an aside, without me realizing it, I forget the,
yes.
with my assessment of people that I'm dealing with. And yeah, so I think it subliminally, I think that's the word I was looking for. You know, okay, so I know somebody, you know, is what I would call a promoter or a very outgoing salesperson type of, they could sell ice to Eskimos type of person, and they might be a red, or they might be like, those things would still come to my mind. You can't be, they're not the end all and be all, but it, you know, you talk faster to those people because they talk fast to you and things like that. So yeah, but tell me a little bit more about, so that's the self-awareness piece, I think.
It
Yeah,
is.
right?
It
Which is,
is.
yeah, so that's the gateway, you say, to intelligent behavior.
Well, a
So
lot of
talk
people can
about
be
that.
self-aware without taking a personality assessment.
Of course, of course. Yeah.
The way in which I use them and the way in which my team use them is to bring them very much into the real world, make them live. And instead of using them as a bit of a party trick, build upon what people know and build it more into the subliminal, the unconscious way that you're using it, and really reinforce that so that they become an inherent part of the way in which the person engages and the way in which that person builds relationships.
Okay, so self-awareness in this area is that something you must learn, or can it be innate, and does it come from being a curious person?
I think there are certain people who have this ability to be a lot more self-aware than others. And they've got an innateness about them. They've got an ability to build up relationships really well and really quickly. And they do it
Yeah.
because they're good at it, because they've
Unconsciously,
got,
right? You do it unconsciously. Yeah. Yeah.
and they've got this essence that we're talking about, emotional intelligence. And there are some people in the world, like me, who has to work very hard on it.
Really?
And well, look, I've been in this field for so long. I've actually then taken all the personality assessments that I work with. I know them in depth.
Yeah.
So I have a great understanding of my personality and my preferences and the way in which I behave. And I know what my strengths are. And I also know what my limitations are. Doesn't mean to say that I'm any better at working with them than anybody else, but that knowledge is the first part of self-awareness. And the older I get and the more I work with them, the better I become.
Well, that's encouraging, isn't it? Yes.
It
Because I think I have this argument with my husband sometimes, because I'll say, well, didn't you notice that, or didn't you see that, or what, you know, like, and it doesn't matter what it is, it's like he doesn't have that depth of detail or interest in that detail. You're still muted, Robin. It's okay.
Am I, can you hear me now?
You're
Yeah,
good. Yeah.
no, that's great. Yes, I think the other thing to bear in mind is that we all perceive and see the world in different ways, and we will see it through our own lens. And our
Right.
own lens is based around what our preferences are and what interests us. So you might see one thing one way, and your partner may see something in a completely different way. You're looking at exactly the same thing, but you can see it and he can't. Or he can see it and you can't. And also, he's got his own interests, and he'll watch certain television programs that you've got no interest in whatsoever.
Right.
That's part of the richness of life, and that's
I
part of the
suppose.
relationship that you've got with him.
Yes, I suppose. I suppose. Do you think though, why do you think that emotional intelligence gives leaders like a powerful competitive edge? Why does it give you a step up?
Well, let's go back to our discussion around artificial intelligence. Let's have a look at what artificial intelligence does. It works with data very, very quickly. It produces outcomes. It helps us in terms of constructing documents. It helps us in terms of analyzing data and coming out with some outputs that we can use. It's very good now at generating images. It's now very good at taking those images and converting them into videos. This is 2026 technology. So what AI is capable of doing is doing some really good magical stuff. But in terms of leading and motivating and inspiring teams, that's where leaders come in. I'm not going to be inspired. I'm not going to be motivated by a robot. I'm going to be inspired and motivated by another human being. And I do it because I want to do it for them as much as wanting to do it for me. And part of that is because I want to do the best that I possibly can. So leaders have a very key role in terms of the relationships and the collaboration that they have at work in ensuring that it works. And they do that through ethical, value-based decision making. They do it through the way in which they engage with people through empathy. And they do it because they give people purpose and they give people meaning. And they can do it creatively. And these are things that robots, AI, can never and will never be able to do.
You know, it's funny. I was doing something on Chat GPT yesterday, and it spit out the answer to what I was looking for, and I said, "I'm not, I think it was some titles. I wanted some ideas on some titles for something, a newsletter I was doing." And I said, "Well, I like this one and I like this one, but I think I'd prefer blah blah blah." And it comes back and it says, "That's very insightful, Janice. I totally agree with you. I think it's lying to me because it doesn't really, right? And it's just the way that I've trained it to talk to me, I guess, and in that more human tone. But you can get caught up in that, you know."
You can. We've got to go back to the fact that it's been programmed to be particularly and overly friendly, so it can
Yes.
be very, very agreeable.
Yes.
And
Yes.
there are prompts out there, and I must admit I haven't used them,
Okay.
but there are prompts out there that you can put into ChatGPT, and you can ask it to put it in its deep memory. That means that it's a lot more critical and a lot less friendly. Now, I like the friendly side,
I do too.
even if it doesn't come out with the right answer. It's nice to be told, oh, well, that's very inspiring, Robin, or that's very interesting, Robin, or you've done a good job here. So even though I've said earlier, I don't get my motivation from the robots, it's still very nice to hear it and read it, isn't
Yeah,
it?
it is. And you have to take it with a grain of salt, that's all.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
You just mentioned empathy. So, in your experience, what role does empathy play in driving performance and engagement at work?
Well, look, let's go back to basics here. I'm talking to you on your podcast, Relationship Rules. You know the answer to this. It's about understanding the other person's perspective. It's engaging with them because you can feel it in the same way and you're starting to think in the same way. You don't have to agree with the other person. You just have to understand.
Where
Now
they're
that
coming
can,
from. Yeah.
yes,
Yes. Okay.
that component is not available to artificial intelligence.
Right.
It can understand the thinking, perhaps, it can understand the context, but it can't understand the feeling, the depth of feeling, and what that is and what that means. It doesn't understand how much it hurts. It doesn't understand how much it inspires. It creates that feeling of joy, that feeling of wonder, that feeling of just getting something really valuable, and it just doesn't understand that. All it does is it churns out words.
Yeah, it does make it. Yeah, it's just missing that component that we, that warm fuzzy that everybody needs. It was,
Yes,
sorry, go
and
ahead.
everybody needs it because they've got a wonderful tool available to them that AI has not got, and AI will never have. And that's a human brain and a nervous system.
Well, yes, yeah, not, yeah, okay. Like when you said the human brain, I'm thinking, well, the robotic brain, like it can spit out the facts just as easily. It's the other piece that makes it different, right? It doesn't have that empathy, that
It doesn't have that squishy pink blob inside its cranium.
yes.
That we really don't know how it works and how it does what it does at a very, very deep level. And we do know to a certain extent where it works and how it works within the robotic brain because it's just very simply a set of algorithms and a set of pathways. So, you know, we can dig around within the robotic brain and we can say, oh, this bit is the memory. Where does the memory reside in our brain? We don't know. You know,
Yeah.
pull out something from your childhood. Where's that come from?
Yes. Yeah, and it's funny, you know. Oh, I just saw somebody this morning on a slight scroll I was doing, was talking about doing the importance of doing, it's nothing to do with emotional intelligence, I don't think, but he was talking about doing brain exercises every day. To help with memory and to help with the somebody was saying about the older I get, the less I remember. And he said, and this guy maintains you do need to keep practicing to maintain your memory, but it's a skill that you have to keep. Like, I always remember people's names. And my husband never remembers people's names. And he says things like, I just don't do it. I can't remember people's names. Well, I say you have to pay attention to it and you have to practice. So I agreed with this guy, this memory thing. But you also mentioned interest. You have to have an interest in it. So it's what you're interested in doing. He can
Yes.
remember the football score of any game in the past 10 years, and that would be American football, just to clarify. And but names, forget it, you know. So there you go. It's a
The other thing that I've learned, and again, this is down to the uniqueness of me, not anybody else. So what I've learned over the years is that I have a very, very strong associative memory in the fact that I can associate various things from way back in the past. So I can remember events with people and I can remember the context and I can remember who they are, what they are. I may not be able to remember people's names, but I have that depth of understanding of what we did together. And as I engage with them again, it all comes flooding back.
Yeah, sometimes I've done that where I've run into someone from my high school or university days, and I can remember that whole thing that you just described, but I don't want to tell them because I'm embarrassed because they don't even remember my name. They recognize me, but they don't remember my name. And I don't
Hey,
want to embarrass them.
let me tell you a little story which is very
Please.
relevant here. Last year, I went on a tour, a holiday, an archaeological tour holiday. in northern Greece. And I chose to go on it with my dearly beloved wife for 40 odd years because the professor that was leading the tour was a friend of mine from school. And as boys, we would go cycling at the weekend and we would walk to and from school and we got to know each other very, very well. Now, I hadn't been in touch with him for almost 50 years. And I turned up on this tour and I said to him,
You didn't
Andrew, it's
tell him you were
absolutely
coming, like you
wonderful.
hadn't.
No, I didn't tell him.
Okay.
Didn't tell him. I just wondered whether the tour operator would have given him a list of people's names and whether he'd have gone down and saw my name and recognized it. Now, whether they didn't or didn't, I don't know. Because if they did, he certainly didn't recognize the name or put the association there. So when I greeted him, he was very cold and very standoffish. And for most of the tour, he completely blanked me or avoided me. And I think a lot of it was the fact that he had either forgotten a lot of what had happened within his school life, or he blanked it out for some reason, because emotionally there was such a level of intensity. He didn't want to or didn't need to remember it. Now, he's a professor. He lives in Greece. He has his family. He has his life in Greece. He has no need to come back to the United Kingdom. So, all of that is very much in the past. But to him, it's not important. And to me, it's very important because I am who I am through the relationships that I've built up over
Of
the years.
course.
They're an inherent part of me, an inherent
So
part
you
of
never
who I
said
am.
anything? You never said anything to him?
We had some conversations, but we didn't have the depth of conversations that I was hoping and
But you
expecting.
told
And
him who you were.
oh, yes,
Oh, okay.
yes. And I did share various aspects of our lives together.
Yeah, but
But like I say, we didn't share memories in the same way. Oh, do you remember this happened? And do you remember when that happened? And do you
He was
remember this
uncomfortable
particular
with
thing?
it.
I've got to put it down to the fact that I don't know how he was feeling, but it just wasn't the same way that I was feeling
Yeah, that's
about it.
fascinating.
But
But I've
yeah.
experienced that too, where, because you have no idea what that the rest of his life brought on. That,
Yeah, this is it. This is
very
it.
interesting. I
So a lot
wonder.
of it is being empathetic and it's being understanding and it's not forcing my agenda onto him. It's just going along with it and trying to influence and trying to build up effectively a new relationship.
Yes, interesting. So I wanted to mention you have a new book, correct? The second edition a year ago, the second edition of The Authority Guide to Emotional Resilience in Business, correct? The
That's
Authority
correct.
Guide.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I just muted too
That's
because
okay.
I coughed, so I didn't
Okay.
want your
Oh, you poor
listeners to
thing.
hear that.
Well, yeah, it's no problem. So, do you want to mention? Let's talk about your book a little bit. So, when did you first release it?
Thank you, Janice. Yes, I released the Authority Guide to Emotional Resilience in Business in 2016. And my publisher contacted me a couple of years ago and said, are you interested in doing a second edition? And I jumped at the chance because although emotional resilience and emotional resilience in business doesn't change, a lot of what has changed has occurred within the last 10 years. We've been through a pandemic. We've got the introduction of artificial intelligence. A lot of work is now done virtually. So I felt it was important to bring those aspects into the book just to bring it back up to date. So the first edition, and for anybody who's got the first edition, it is still very, very relevant. That forms the basis of the second edition. But what the second edition does is it just goes into different areas that weren't as relevant as they are today because of events that happened over the period of time.
So, you've trained people all over the world. So, Can you share, like, it when you mentioned earlier about, how when we were talking about the language stuff and about different countries and the different spellings and all of that, how is it when you're in a completely different country, maybe English isn't their first language, and I guess they think differently in different places of the world. I mean, I'm not as experienced in that. How do you bring it together? How do you build those relationships? Do you see differences, I guess, is what I'm asking. Major differences, or are all people the same?
Can I just change your words slightly? I don't
Please,
see
please do.
differences. I don't see differences. I experience differences,
See,
which is
yesterday I was talking to someone who was all about visual leadership, so there.
I'm rightly so. No, I'm not observing differences because we can all observe differences when we go to a different country. I think the key there is to experience it. And when I go to a country, I can never know and will never know what it's like to live in that country. So what I'm trying to do is to learn and understand and look at the relevance of what I do within their culture. And the way to do that is to treat them like human beings. So I'm not interested in status. I'm not interested in ego. I'm interested in the way in which they engage with the world. And more importantly, I'm interested in the way in which they engage with other people and how they build up relationships. And utilizing that knowledge, I will work in an emotional intelligence way to help them to understand how to use and apply emotional intelligence.
That's really interesting, because maybe I'm too maybe I lump things too much stereotypically, but that's what I'm thinking. Like, stereotypically, the a certain, like maybe the Asian people, they're much more closed and keep things to themselves. This is just my perception, okay? And so they don't, well, and it's not true, they can be very emotional. Like, I've seen it, that they can be, but so I'm sort of contradicting myself, but and I have certain perceptions of different races of people, I guess, and how would I experience it through those eyes? Am I helping or hurting myself? How do you get those? I don't know what I'm trying to say, but through
Well, I
emotional
think
intelligence, I think it's
yeah.
different. Yeah.
What I tend to do is to go into a workshop with people
Yes.
to try and understand. Now, I've got my own prejudices, I've got my own beliefs, I've got my own understandings of the country or the people
Yeah.
that I'm working with. I've got to help them. And I've just got to help them in terms of building up all what we've already talked about. An understanding of themselves through self-awareness and an understanding of emotions and how they work with emotions, how they express those emotions, and how they regulate them. So, if we strip it down to absolute basics, we look at the seven basic human emotions that everyone experiences, and then we just build it up from there. And we could, there's a richness in looking at those seven emotions. Because working with those emotions in a very raw and intense way is really under, it underpins a lot of the problems that people have around relationships. So let me mention the seven, seeing
Well, I
as
was
I
just going to
drop
say,
back to
so
the...
break it down for me. Yes.
Yeah, we've got happiness.
Yes.
So we all experience moments of joy and happiness when things are going the way in which we want them to. We all experience anger, and these are the ones that people tend to gravitate towards very, very quickly. But then there's also sadness when we lose something very, very dear to us. There's also fear of the unknown. We experience surprise when things happen that we don't expect. We have a feeling or an emotion or an expression of disgust when there's something that really goes against what we believe and really does cause us a lot of emotional problems. And then there's another one in terms of contempt, where I feel superior to the other person. Now, if we combine all of those emotions, like, say, a paint pot, we get a palette of emotions, and we can have a little bit of anger here, a little bit of sadness there, and a little bit of fear there. And that creates a certain emotional state. So, what I tend to do is to work with the seven basic human emotions and help me to understand how those work and how to understand how to work with those more efficiently and more effectively, particularly within the business environment. And if we bring it back to that, we've got to take away a lot of the cultural prejudices anyway, because we're all trying to do the same thing.
That's interesting though, because it brings to mind a story that I experienced when I was invited to teach a session on networking to a group of I think they were like it was like an adjunct college course in a local college, and so this professor wanted me to talk about networking and give them some, actual experience. They were new to Canada, I think, maybe, and from different places. And I remember putting them into groups and going around to the different groups to see. I'd given them something to, some business thing to talk about. And I remember this one woman, she just stood there the entire time and she was kind of behind the circle a little bit. And not wanting to participate very much. And afterwards, I asked her about it on her own. And I was so, I felt really, I don't know, ignorant, I guess, in that this circle that she was in was all men except for her. And in her culture, they step behind the men. That was the, I think it was Middle Eastern. She was Middle Eastern of some sort, right? And she could not bring herself to participate. And I'm not sure that they even tried, but they weren't all Middle Eastern. They were just, a group of guys. But and it made me realize that there's so much that I don't think about when I'm, in front of a group of people. Now everybody, it's a multicultural community. This was quite a few years ago, but I didn't, it wasn't as relevant or as in the forefront for me to think about it. So I'm sure that's all has to be taken into consideration in every situation, even though you take it back to the seven parts of what did you call it?
Human emotion,
Of
seven
human
human
emotion,
emotions.
yeah, the human emotions. Then there's still those other things that are there that have to be.
Oh, yeah, look, very much so. And what I do in these sort of circumstances is I say to people, right at the beginning of the training lecture, look, I'm going to create a learning environment for you. It's up to you to learn through this environment because your individual needs are going to be very different from each other, and they're very different from the way in which I think that you need training. So all I can do is to facilitate you to have the right environment in order to learn. So it's up to you to take away from this workshop what it is that you need. It also is a nice, easy way to get rid of any dissenters. Because you're actually saying to them, look, this is your opportunity to learn. If you don't want to learn, it's up to you. And we've all run training workshops where people just aren't interested. They're there as hostages. So, in those sort of situations, I don't have hostages in my workshop. Just simply because I've created that statement
But
right up front.
that means that you are much more highly aware than I was at that time. when
I
I
think
did that
you are
class.
going to be far, far more aware of what you were at that time as well. And you've grown and you've developed and you've got that understanding because of that experience rather
Exactly.
than
But you see, it
despite
stayed
it.
with me, right? It stayed with me,
Yes.
you know, and there's
Yes.
all sorts of things like that. So
Yes.
absolutely.
Good, because that's all part of you learning and growing. And I've got various stories and various skeletons in my cupboard that I pull out and rattle in front of you.
Yeah, no, that's really good. That's really good. Okay, thank you. So is there one story or one situation or one memory that comes to you from your across the world that is maybe an example of joy of something that happened?
Look, I think it's only fair to say that I do experience that feeling of joy at the end of a training workshop where I feel that people have had some level of transformation. I can see it, I can feel it, I can sense it. And it goes back to what I've said to you in terms of facilitating the workshop. It is entirely up to me to create that learning environment. And then you rightly said it's a case of having that awareness. So my sensory acuity is such that I'm continually scanning the horizon. So if somebody's not engaging, it's up to me to go along and find out what the issue is. It may be that they just have a bereavement, they've had some bad news, they've just spoken to their boss, and there's a major issue that's brewing at the back of their mind. Whatever I do and say, it's not going to take that away from them. So if they are feeling a certain level of pain, it's a case of working with it. But more often than not, most people really do engage. They get a lot from it. And the feedback that I have is incredibly positive, and I find that very, very rewarding. At the end of the day, I'm absolutely shattered. And all I want to do is to go and have a lie down and have a bit of a sleep. But it also goes back to looping back to right at the beginning of our conversation. It fits very much with my personality type.
You
Because for
introvert.
those who know what Myers-Briggs is, I'm
Okay.
an ENFP, which means that I'm creatively looking out to do the best for people and helping people do the best for themselves. And that is inherently who I am, and what I'm about.
That's beautiful. I think that the more I've spoken to you, the more I can see how, no, I can feel it actually, is how much you feel when you're talking about what you're doing and how it is a passion. And I can see that. And you think, I think that you think about what you're going to say before you say it.
Well, if I do, it's very, very quick, and I probably don't notice it. But again, is
Yeah, it's
that
an eight.
nurture or is it training?
I don't know. It's anyway. Okay.
But thank you, Janice. Thank you.
If there's one takeaway that you would like my listeners and my viewers to remember about emotional intelligence and leadership together, what would it be?
The future is human, and the future is around the way in which you are emotionally engaging with the world. What is your purpose? What is it that fires you up? What is it that motivates you, and what is it that inspires you? If you don't know, go and find out, because ultimately you will then understand yourself better. And when it happens, you can feel it better.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. So just before we wrap up, then just a couple of quick fire questions, if you don't mind. So my favorite word is curiosity, and I would love to know your take on it. Do you believe that curiosity is innate or learned? And part two, what are you most curious about these days?
Curiosity is an interesting word, because the moment people talk about curiosity, my brain pathways are such that it goes down an avenue of curiosity killed the cat, which is an expression that we use in the
Yes.
United Kingdom to suggest that curiosity is not necessarily a good thing.
And
But
satisfaction brought it back.
always is that
That's the
correct?
second part of the
Is
question.
it? I've never heard that bit.
Yes.
But I'm continually curious. I'm really, really interested in finding things out. And you can only do that through curiosity. And again, this is an element that we can do as humans that AI can't.
This is true.
So let's nurture curiosity. What
Yeah.
am I curious about? I've mentioned earlier in our conversation around taking an image and converting it into a video. I'm very curious about how I can get AI to work for me with some of the new things that it's doing in the future to help me to bring learning through my online courses in a much more engaging way. They're very 2025. I now need to make them 2026 relevant. And that's where my curiosity is driving me. And look, Janice, we're having this conversation on the 15th of January, not even a month into January, and I'm already curious and exploring this.
That's fun. How do you take in most of the do you your information these days? Are you a reader? I know you probably are, but a reader, or like still need to hold a book or an e-reader or video or listen? What's your favorite mode of?
All of them.
Okay.
I think what I will do is use all of them to reinforce my learning through the other modes. So yes, I'll read a book. Then I'll listen to somebody talking to me about it. Then I'll look at a video. Then I'll go away and experiment. So I like all of them, but that's my preference. And what I've got to realize is that other people don't necessarily share that preference for all of them.
Okay. And I may have asked you this when I first met you, but last question, very important. Who's your favorite soccer team?
Who's my favorite soccer team? I am one of the most unusual
I know.
Englishmen
Now I remember the
that
answer. Yeah.
exists because I have no interest in soccer whatsoever.
Just seems
Here
so
I am.
un-English. I don't know.
Yes, here I am in the heart of soccer land. Less than a mile away is the oldest soccer ground in the United Kingdom. And we've
Old
got Manchester
Trafford? No.
United.
Old
Oh,
Trafford? Web.
no.
Oh.
It's in a little village called Turton behind the church, behind the parish church.
Okay.
There is nothing, absolutely nothing there to suggest that it's so relevant in the field of soccer, apart from a little plaque right at the front of the soccer ground, relaying that fact. It's not a stadium.
But
It's not a
okay.
stadium.
Okay.
No, it's just a patch of green with a few goalposts and a bit of paint on the ground. So to answer your question, what my favorite soccer team is I am driven by other people's passion around the sport. So if they talk to me and they're passionate about it, I love listening. But don't ask me any questions about soccer because I don't know one end of a ball from the
I
other.
love it. Well, thanks for being so honest, Robin. That's so funny. Okay, because I know how in Manchester, I mean, I was a kid when I lived there, so I don't remember anything about it from there, just from my parents in that respect. And I mean, you were either red or blue. It wasn't, there was
Yes,
no
that's
in
right.
between, right? Yeah.
That's right.
Anyway, but this has been lovely. Thank you so much for spending time with me and my audience. And I would like you to let my audience know if they enjoyed what they heard, where can they find more of you? And I will put it in the show notes. So how can people get hold of you, Robin?
People can get hold of me through my website, which is eiforchange.com. That's EI number four, change.com. They can go and have a look at my courses, which is https colon backslash backslash emotional dot intelligence dot courses.
You know, you don't have to have all that stuff anymore. I think it's just the name of the website.
I know all the bits at the beginning. If I don't put it in, it doesn't necessarily come up, so I say it. And then people can find me on LinkedIn. I was an early adopter within LinkedIn, so I got the URL, which is just Robin Hills. So if
Yes,
you've
and I
got,
have Janice Porter too. So that's,
it's wonderful, isn't it? So, you know, I
yes.
don't have a load of numbers and letters after my
You don't
name.
have to
That
have
way,
those anymore, though. You can
no,
change.
I know, but a lot of people, interestingly enough, over the holiday period, I was looking at a lot of people's LinkedIn profiles and they've still got
I
them.
know that's part of what I lure people in with. I'll change it with them. And okay, and your book is called again, The Authority Guide to Emotional Resilience in Business, second edition. And where can they find that?
They can find that on Amazon. They can find that in the US version of Amazon, and they can find it in the Canadian version of Amazon as well as in the UK version.
Perfect. That's wonderful. So thank you. Thank you so much. And I know that Robin has reminded us that emotional intelligence isn't a soft skill, it's a success skill. In a world that's increasingly automated, connection is still what drives trust, collaboration, and lasting results. So if you would like to learn more about Robin and his work, I will put those places in the show notes. Basically, EI, the number four, change.com, EI for change.com. And as always in business, and in life, remember relationships rule. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know, I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.